Hey everyone, welcome to episode 34 of the Worldwide Knicks podcast. Omar here per usual alongside Alex and Rafa. Guys, welcome back to another episode. Consecutive weeks for the first time and it feels like forever. You know, it's been a interesting offseason for us in terms of release schedule. You know, just kind of bringing out the content when it comes out or when it's imperative for it to come out. So guys, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks, Omar. Yeah, pretty exhausted. You know, we've got loads going on. COVID in the house. Got last week of teaching.
No rest for Alex, man. Alex gets no breaks.
It's draft week, so you know, I'm hyped for that. So that's keeping me awake.
Definitely. What happens when you have a family? No rest.
It's funny. We were Alex and I right before you hopped on the Zoom, Rafa. We were talking about the perils of fatherhood after we saw the picture that that Danny on Nick's Twitter posted. Just looked thoroughly exhausted. And man. Alex was I love those pictures. That it gets a little easier. I was like, well, does it? And he's like, no. And I was like, the perils of parenthood.
I love those pictures. The father's like in the mother's smiling, but with huge bags under their eyes, like.
Looking please like help. Jeff Van Gundy in the 90s, you know.
Send help,
if I told Danny the truth, that he would never.
It would crush him. Yeah, he would just delete his account, honestly. No more morning drives with Danny B.
They can be an issue. They can be an issue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One little bit of housekeeping, I guess. This past week, I joined the Let's Talk Knicks podcast and on a Twitter space with alongside fellow Knicks Twitter alums Brutus Gorham and a guy named Khalil, I believe his name was. I can't remember his username. I apologize, Khalil. But super fun time. It's something that we might be doing every week. So keep an eye out for that stuff coming out. We talked about the team is constructed, a little bit about the draft, just an overall great conversation on Twitter spaces. I'll tell you what, though, man, I don't know like what it is about Twitter Spaces. That thing makes my phone like lava. It just makes your phone run super hot if you're like doing it for a long time, because we were on for like an hour and a half. You know what I mean? And I was just like, all right, this is
your takes were too hot, man.
Clearly. Yeah. The biggest like call out was, I think, Charlotte, who is awesome, runs Let's Talk Knicks. She was a little unsure on IQ's role, which, you know, this is a topic that we've discussed ad nauseum on Worldwide Knicks. And me and Brutus were like, no, he's a point guard. And she's like, I don't know, he's more off ball. And, you know, the age old debate of putting IQ in the box, you know. And but no, it was fun. We look forward to being a part of those more often in the future, more spaces, just to get the takes out there. And, you know, you got to always be putting the takes out. But like Rafa alluded to, it is the draft. It's draft week. You know, it's always a time of hope for teams, you know, so I guess we could start off. Are you guys excited for the draft? You interested in it? So how are we feeling?
I mean, I absolutely love the draft. I've loved the draft all the time. But I mean, this year is, I mean, I guess it's just because of the podcast. I've got so much deeper into all the kind of player research and things that I normally do a bit on the top guys. I've learned a few lessons. I remember the Obi draft. I didn't even look at Obi, any tape of Obi, just assumed he was out of our reach. There was big rumours about the Cavs taking him, so I was just like, right, okay. I didn't even consider the fact that we could have moved up, which we were trying to do in that draft, and then he ended up falling anyway. And when we picked him, I was like, right, okay. I don't know anything about this guy, so... Yeah, I'm covering a lot more of the draft now, and I just find it really interesting. And looking back, it's something we talked about, Omar, that we're going to look back in, you know, a period's time and just see, you know, how our kind of research and opinions have kind of fared over the season. So, because there's always guys that are obviously going to be busts, there's always guys that are going to drop and be a success and this, that, and the other. So I think it's just really good kind of looking back at things like that, but you're always going to make mistakes with it. Even the guys that are, you know, super talented at this kind of stuff, you know, are going to make mistakes with their predictions. So bring it on. Looking forward to it. So Rafa, what about you? You're not so big in the draft, no?
Yeah, I'm never knowledgeable about players or anything. I just know about the players, the weeks before the draft, they're already talking about every single player. So it's what I read, but I don't follow it. So I don't even pretend to know anything about players. But I always see the draft. I'll go into draft like, oh, let's see, let's wait for that big trade that one team will do or the Knicks will do. And I always get up disappointed because nothing ever happens anymore. The next pick will pick this guy. Oh, yeah, nothing happens. And, yeah, just pain. Just see the Knicks. At least the Knicks draft's always early. So at least we got that coming from us.
Hey, you're done. You're done quick.
Apart from last year, you know, if I'd done the same amount of research in the Knicks picks last year and then ended up all over the place in the draft board. So, I mean, it worked out well, of course. But, you know, Grimes was pretty low down. And,
yeah.
So probably wouldn't have done much research on him.
Yeah, that's the thing. You never really know what happens with the draft. And even this draft, there's a lot of theories that Knicks are going to move up, move down, pick this at this position, then trade this guy and that guy. Like, all kinds of plans, all kinds of things. And last year, it was the same thing. And nothing happened. Nothing happened the way anybody thought about it.
Yeah.
And it's the magic of the draft, isn't it? It's every team has their plans, every team trying to do something, and you never know what happens because the phones must be off. I mean, I hate talking on the phone. I would hate being a GM at this time. Like, please, please, no. Like Steve Carell style, The Office. Speaking of the draft, let's just... I have this because everybody's talking about how the Knicks will move up. It's like people are 100% sure we'll move up, trade our pick and whatever else is available. Most people say Julius Randle and Omar Kreis, but everybody says we're going to trade for the fourth pick and get the fourth or fifth pick and get Jaden Ivey. Now, my thing is, I know people are really super high on Ivey, and he's going to be a Knick player for every people are sure that he's going to be our player. My thing is, if reports are true that we are going after we're going to give quickly the keys, does it make sense to trade up to get a guy like Ivy, because you're trading up and you're making quite a leap in this draft? So you'll need to get rid of some players. Is quickly in that conversation even, or just it's quickly Ivy and RJ? Is he even worth trading up that high and giving up Randle, for example? What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, my theory on it is, and I was talking to Omar about this earlier, was that I think it's more than likely if they are going to get up to four, they're going to do it in maybe two steps. I mean, a lot of people are targeting that seventh pick from Portland. And then once you've got that, flipping that on again in another package, because what the Kings kind of want, I think, is going to be quite tough to just come together with a package like that. The picks at the moment, Rafa, are pretty much set. So, I mean, pick 1 to 3, which is going to be Holmgren, Smith Jr. and Banchero. There might be a change in the order as to which one goes 1, 2, and 3, but those three are pretty set as being the top three. Then Ivy's going to be out on his own at 4. It's pretty definite he's going to go 4. And then maybe Keegan Murray is pretty set at 5, I think. But other than that, it's very flat as to the quality. I mean, it's a good quality, but it's very close between 6 and, 12, 13 maybe. So I don't think it actually would take a huge amount to move up to 7 because the quality is so close. But I think getting up to 4, because there is such a jump in quality when you go from maybe pick 6 to pick 4, then I think that's going to be really expensive. You know, it might be a couple of future picks, obviously the Dallas pick, but you've got to remember the Dallas pick's going to be pick 20 to 30 probably next year. It's not a great pick. You know, would you take our pick? You know, maybe that's going to be 15 to 20, something like that. Or maybe 10 to 20. again, a good pick, but not great. You know, you've got to think about the value of these things. Then, as you mentioned, are you going to package a player in there? Yeah, you know, everybody throws Randall in there, but you're like, you've always got, as a bang on it, but pretty much every episode, you've got to think about it from the other team's point of view. You know, why would the Kings want Randall? Do you know they've got Sabonis there? And I know Sabonis is playing centre more, but you saw the kind of logjam that he had in Indiana with Turner. You're going to have a similar situation with Randall. I just don't see it at all as to why they would want him. I just don't see a straight trade from 11 to 4. I think it's going to be much more complex than that. It's going to require a lot of moving parts. I think, as you mentioned about quickly, I would think possibly more like Obi would be the one to be included. It's going to take somebody like Obi quickly. Obviously, they're going to ask for RG. But I think it's more than likely, it's going to be picks plus one of the young players, Grimes, quickly, or Obi, somebody like that.
So for me, what it all comes down to is the Knicks looking at what they're taking stock of what they have now and then deciding, is this the guy? So if they look at Jaden Ivey, a lot of people have said he could be Donovan Mitchell, right? Some people have said that. Some people have said he looks like John Morant or Russell Westbrook. I mean, you're talking about all-stars, you know, guys who probably, Morant's a little early and Mitchell a little early, but we're on Hall of Fame trajectories. And so if you're looking at it and your evaluation says, hey, this guy has the goods, we got to go and get him. And then it, quite frankly, it doesn't matter if your young players who you view as probably role players in the league are being sacrificed to go get them. You know, fans, Alex, you've said this a million times before, fans overvalue their players, you know, and they always have overvalued their players. So when that's the case, and if it all comes down to, you know, the scouts and Tibbs and all these teams, all these guys in the front office, if they see Ivy and say, hey, this is a guy we got to go up and get, then you go do it. You know, you go get the player. Obviously, Rafa, to your point, you know, you think about if you're going to hand over the point guard keys to quickly. Okay, how does that work? You know, then your starting backcourt wing situation looks like quickly Ivy RJ. And how does that look defensively? You know, that's a question that they would have to solve for. But I think if you see a guy that you think in the NBA that's your guy, you go and get him. And if I think them focusing on a young player, as opposed to, you know, going all in on Dame Lillard or Donovan Mitchell, for example, fits more in line with the timeline of RJ Barrett, because that's the cornerstone of your franchise. You know, we know that. You know, it's not Obi Toppin, it's not Emmanuel Quickley, it's not Quentin Grimes, it's not any of these guys. It's RJ Barrett. So if you make that determination, yeah, you go get him, whatever it costs. Are they going to go after him? I don't know. I said this last week when we had Mario on. I don't really see a lot of players that we have that the Kings value. I think earlier we were talking, I think Fournier is an intriguing idea for them just from a shooting perspective, and they'd be replacing what they lost when they traded Buddy Hield to Indiana. Burks as a backup guard wing player combo that they could utilize makes a lot of sense. And from a young perspective, Grimes and Reddish are interesting for them as well. So, and that's all without, you know, throwing in the obligatory, oh, they're going to trade for Julius Randle, because they're not going to trade for Julius Randle. It doesn't make any sense for them to trade for Julius Randle. You know, Julius would need a situation where you can kind of run the offense through him, which is what the Kings are doing with Sabonis. So even if he is playing center, and plus a Sabonis-Randle front court could arguably be one of the worst defensive front courts in NBA history. So that is bad. So I don't think the Kings are going after Julius. I think another team might, but I don't think it's the Kings.
Yeah, I think Randall could possibly get you to that seventh pick quite easily. He seems a better fit in Portland for a start, and they don't seem to be wanting to rebuild. So that could get us up to seven, I think. But just want to mention the great Chris Persiainen, I think it was, that mentioned about, I thought it was real interesting, he talked about the Knicks front office seemed to be obsessed with, in this last year or so, not losing out on deals, just as in like every deal has to be, you know, we get something out of it, whether it's a second round pick and in the next couple of years or whatever, you know, they always want to seem to be kind of winning deals. I don't know if that's from Leon Rose's kind of background as an agent. He always wants to be the kind of on top. But, you know, this looks like this situation where if you can get Ivy in the door without losing, obviously, RJ and possibly a couple of others, then this is the time to overpay. You know, you've got all these picks stashed, which we're never going to use. Yes, we're stocking them for potentially a star trade, but you're like, if we get a year from now and we say, oh, we've paid a little bit much, but we've got Ivy in the door, and you're sure that he's going to be the one that takes us to the next level, then now's the time to overpay. And it doesn't have to be a trade for a star. We know fine well how hard it is to trade for a star. Maybe the trade for a star is in the draft rather than, you know, in the current NBA.
The thing I see, when you see the top teams that you can trade up, and picking up on your point, Omar, about trading Randall, the Kings doesn't make sense because he got Sabonis. The Pacers, they're trying to rebuild. So, and if they want to play through Miles Turner, it doesn't make a lot of sense. The Blazers, it can make sense, but if they resign Nurkic, and Nurkic is healthy and he can get back to that level he was playing, it doesn't make as much sense having Randall with Nurkic. And then the Pelicans, if Zion is back, it doesn't make sense as well. So if you think about it, the only team that can be crazy enough to pick up Julius Randle, it's the Pistons. But we would need to get together not only Julius Randle, but maybe someone else. Again, the Kings, we don't know who the Kings are going to pick, because Kings have Sabonis, so they get what? And they get the wings. So not the wings, the guards. So where are they going? Trading another guard for them to trade, trading another forward that they're not going to get enough minutes. They got enough centers. They would want wingers, and probably we don't have, well, that's where Fournier comes in. Like, Fournier, maybe for all of these teams that I mentioned, especially the ones that want to win now, Fournier maybe be the best guy to trade for them, and Burks as well. So I don't know if Randall is going in any of these trades. I don't think he's even a mention, because it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like going to the Suns. Hey, you want a guard? Like, no, we have enough.
Let me throw this out at you guys real quick. I just thought about this. So a lot of people are talking about trading down with Charlotte, right?
Yeah.
Charlotte is in a weird predicament with their lineups. You know, I almost wonder if they look at Julius and see this could be our complement to LaMelo. And not for like a pick thing, but just maybe they try to facilitate a trade to get Julius Randle in Charlotte. You know, maybe they look at it from the perspective of, we can't really attract big free agents. Our big three moving forward will be LaMelo, Bridges, if they can re-sign him in restricted free agency, and Julius Randle. That could be a potential target that not many people are talking about. Most people talk about the Kings, of course, and talking about the Pacers and the Blazers just because of draft position. But I almost wonder if the trading of Julius Randle doesn't really have anything to do with the draft. Maybe it's something that happens after the draft. Just kind of food for thought there.
Just with Randle, I mean, we've talked many times about how the fact that, I mean, his value is about as low as it can get at the moment. So, I mean, what's the point of trading him at the minute when that's just bad asset management, that you trade somebody that low? As for Charlotte, I think, you know, they've obviously got issues as well at the moment, especially in their coaching situation.
Yeah,
I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, how much a coach has influence in draft choices and things like that, especially with Tibbs. But, you know, because we talk about, oh, is this person a Tibbs player? Well, does that even come into the conversation in the draft room? You know, that, oh, will this guy work, or are they just drafting the best player available and saying to Tibbs, well, this is what we've got you, just get on with it, sort of thing. So there's so many questions, which is why, I mean, this draft might not be the best draft quality-wise in recent years, but it's just I'm finding it absolutely fascinating, all the little subplots going on at the moment.
And when everybody speaks about moving up, they always say talk about Jade 90. But there are a few people that talk about another guy can be more suitable for the team, and someone here in the pod is a fan of Dyson Daniels. I mean, not as much, because Jaden Ivey gets all the hype, but Dyson Daniels is a guy that people talk about that we can trade up as well. Maybe we don't need to trade as up. That's why we mention the Blazers, because when we're trading up against with the Kings, it's about Jaden Ivey. But when we trade up with the Blazers, it's not Jaden Ivey.
No, I think the only reason they trade up to seven is just to take a stepping stone up to four. I can't really see them just trading assets to get up to seven, just to trade somebody that's not that much better than what they can get at 11. I think they're pretty. I don't know. I think if they trade up to seven, then they've got other ideas what to do with that pick. But as I said, there's just so many subplots going on at the moment that. Yeah. You know, maybe they do. Maybe they've seen somebody like Mathurin or Daniels that they just think is you know the one they want at seven. I don't know.
I have a hard time believing that they're gonna trade up to seven to then parlay that to trade up to four. I don't know. I mean, Daniels. He's been jumping up the boards a little bit, you know, because he was kind of, I feel like, at the beginning of the process, like before the combine, was mocked to go, like, you know, towards the end of the lottery. Yep. His workouts, and he's impressed a lot of teams, and there's a good chance he doesn't make it past Indiana at six at this point. Mm-hmm. So, and it's funny because, like, he's the guy from New Zealand, right, Dyson Daniels?
Australia,
my apologies. So everybody like immediately is like, oh yeah, it's like Josh Giddey, you know. Like I was like, okay,
do you think it's the hype because of Giddey?
I think
a little bit.
I think that's helping him. I'm not saying the guy's not talented. He obviously is, but yeah. you don't project to go in the top 10 of a draft and not be talented.
Yeah, but sure.
But then again, I think the combine does have a huge influence.
For sure.
Do you know, and he apparently blew teams away at the combine.
So did Kevin Knox, though. So I don't know.
Yeah. My thing about it, guys, is like all this, how this whole draft shakes out is in the hands of the Kings. Everything, because like you mentioned at the top, Alex, the top three, regardless of order of how they go, is kind of set with Holmgren, Smith, and Banchero. But what the Kings do, do they just go ahead and take Ivy, even though it seems like he doesn't want to play there? Do they take Shaedon Sharpe and kind of go for the high upside guy? Do they go with the high floor guy, go Keegan Murray? And what they do is going to impact so much. Because if they take Ivy, then that affects what Detroit and Indiana do at 5 and 6, which in turn, you know, affects what the Knicks can do via the trade situation. So,
they've got Mitchell and Fox as well. They don't need another high usage guard. Yeah. You know, they're set at the guard position, and I know the best player available and everything, but best player available in the Kings' sense is an opportunity to trade and pick up assets elsewhere. So
yeah, if they clearly went the duo with Fox and Sabonis by trading Haliburton, that would make no sense for them to trade another guard. That's why I was saying it's and agreeing with Omar, like what the Kings do, because there's no we have no idea what the Kings can do, because they can draft whoever they can draft. I don't know, me, if they want, it's the Kings. So
like Mario said last week, right, you never know with the Kings, you know, they're a wild card.
And we can't have two Portuguese players in the NBA at once, Rafa.
Do we get Nemus back as part of the trade haul?
Oh my god,
we trade up to four to get Ivy.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you imagine Rafa on this board?
Rafa, how quickly would you buy the jersey? Is the question.
No, how quickly
you
would
buy
I
all
even
the jerseys, not just one.
No, man. How quickly would I turn on Tibbs for not playing him? That's the question. Like 2 seconds. Yeah, there you go. But I mean, it would be it would be the best thing ever. Like the first Portuguese player to play in, with the Knicks. Sure. Give me that jersey.
I guess, Alex, would you, I mean, if they ended up with Dyson Daniels, would you be okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, he was somebody I was really, really keen on early on when I started looking at the draft. I really loved his, I mean, his defense is obviously looks pretty elite. He's a really nice passer as well. He's got a good height, great work ethic as well. But his shooting and breaking down defenses off the dribble are a bit of a worry, which is obviously a huge part of the NBA. I mean, you look at the problems Frank had. I'm not comparing him to Frank, but you know, just that way that Frank just couldn't break down defenses, and that's I think for a guard in the NBA, that's just such a big thing. He did improve a little bit throughout the year on that, but I just don't think he's a great fit with the Knicks. I also think you'd have to trade up to get him, and I don't think he's a sure enough prospect to give up assets to get up and get him. I just think it would be a bit of, again, bad asset management to try and move up to somebody that I'm just not that keen on. Do you know? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think Ivy's a bit more of a sure, you know, surefire thing. Okay. I think Daniel's got a bit of a lower floor. So, I've gone off him more and more as I watch the, you know, the breakdowns of him.
You know, looking at him, I feel like people are just falling in love with the measurables on paper. Yeah. It's like he's this crazy athlete, big guard, you know, he's 6'6". But, you know, the shooting's not really good. I mean, like 25% from three, you know, on G League Ignite. And like, it's just, and the volume isn't really there. So it makes you wonder a little bit of, like you said, how he would mesh with this team, if he's a good fit with the Knicks. And if you have to trade up to 7 or 8 with Portland or New Orleans to get him, you know, and you got to give up maybe one of your young players to do so, I just don't see that being worthwhile for the Knicks. I'm like, if you're going to do a trade up, swing for the fences and get Jaden Ivey, you know, that don't do this. Like you had mentioned before, guys, is Chris Persiainen talking about how this front office wants to win a trade or whatever. Don't try to win a trade and get like a player who's not really the guy you want. Just get the guy you want.
Yeah, just get the guy you want. Yeah,
I think the front office is just doing what they think it's best for the team. They're not concerned about winning trades or anything. But maybe I'm just wrong, because the way I see it, and I've mentioned to you guys before, I think we'll trade our pick or have some kind of trade this draft or after draft, because we need to move assets. Burks, Fournier, Noel, whoever else maybe you can throw out. Maybe that's why we trade up with the Blazers, because they want to trade their pick to get a few assets. Maybe if we can get a few more minutes to Grimes, Cam, and whoever else who we want to play, McBride, maybe that's why we do that trade. Doesn't matter if we're moving up or down. I think we're moving, we're doing something with this, because we need to get room for more players. And if we get another player right here in this draft, oh, we really want this guy, let's draft him. Yeah, you don't have enough minutes to play it, so you need to move pieces, and that maybe you use a draft to do it. But we talk about moving up, but there are people think we're going to stay steady at 11 because we're not going to be able to trade. And there are a few names, because every mock draft says a different name. It's coming into Alex's point that this draft, after a certain player, it's everything goes. And a name that comes up, I'm not really a fan of drafting a guard just at this position, if you say 11, but a guy that comes up is Johnny Davis. Some people say it's a bit of a reach because he's mocked lower than 11, but apparently Knicks fans love him as well, if we say here. Do you love him or do you not love him?
I've not shut up about him for the last 2 weeks, I don't think. the first time I watched him, I saw the Knicks had him in for a workout or whatever, and you know, I'd heard rumors that they were interested in him. So he was one of the first ones I went really deep and looked at a lot of film on him. And he was the first one that gave me that kind of real buzz of excitement. I was like, this is my guy, you know, like he had everything that I want in a prospect. You know, he's got amazing defensive instincts, you know, and he's really strong, but he uses his strength well as well. You know, it's not just about being strong, but he uses it in the right way. But he's not that explosive, but you know, he's got like a little nice kind of mid-range game as well. His three-point shot is his main downside, but his form's nice, you know. And I always think when looking at draft prospects, especially when you're looking at their kind of downside, as long as it's fixable, and especially when it comes to shooting, as long as the form's okay, you know, it can be a difficult to adjust to the three-point line in the NBA. It can be difficult to do this, but as long as the form's there and as long as the aggressiveness is there, then the shooting will come. You always look at kind of free throw percentage as well as another guide. So his free throw percentage is fine as well. I think, you know, the big thing with Davis is that he was on a team where, you know, he was regularly double teamed, which affected his shot quality. Now, obviously, he's not going to be the number one guy if he came on the Knicks, and I think that's the main worry. I think that's the reason he drops in a lot of boards, is that he's in college, he was the main guy, and he struggled from that respect. And I think we don't have enough sample size or evidence where he's not the main guy that we think, can this guy actually come in and be a complementary player rather than the main man? And I think just from the fact that he's just got an insane work ethic. He's you know, he's got his strength, he's got his defense, he's got all the tools that he needs to be a complementary player. And I can see it. I can see that he doesn't need to be that main man. And he's almost like what he was in college is just not what he's supposed to be. And I don't know. I mean, it is a little bit of a risk, but when you're drafting at 11, you're going to have to take a bit of a risk, I think, you know. And you know, I just think, yeah, he ticks all the boxes for me as to what I look at for a draft. I mean, the first thing I always look at is that work ethic. Is this guy just going to be completely driven to get to the next level? And yeah, he does. You know, he's got that RJ kind of grit and you know, fight. He's just never going to be a guy that kind of gives up or just, you know, doesn't want to be the best player he can be. So yeah, I mean, he would be my pick if it was at 11. I don't know if he will be 11, but if he does fall to 11, I would, a bit of a cliche, but I would be running up to the stage to draft him. So yeah, he's my guy if we're at 11s.
So for me, Johnny Davis feels like the type of player that this front office likes to draft. Like, really think about it. Ever since Leon took over, he takes Obi Toppin and Emmanuel quickly, two-year play or multiple-year players at their universities, won accolades and awards. You know, quickly was the SEC Player of the Year in college. Toppin was the National Player of the Year. They take guys like Grimes and Deuce McBride, who multiple years in college, great defenders, excellent work ethic. They took a flyer on Sims, but that's so late in the second round, you know, but he was also a four-year guy at Texas, you know, so there's a theme here. So you look at Johnny Davis, it's two-year guy, rode the bench his freshman season, came in and became conference player of the year the next year. And he really had to do a lot on the Wisconsin team that was pretty bad in terms of just having people there. You watch any of these games that he played in, and they're swarming him every single time he touches the ball. Constantly faced doubles and triples when he was going to the basket. Excellent rebounder for a guy his size. Averaged 8 rebounds per game, guy 6'5". I mean, that's pretty impressive in the college game here in the U.S. Yes, the shooting is a concern. Yes, the playmaking is a concern. But like you mentioned, Alex, when you're drafting somebody at 11, late lottery, you're going for a swing. You know, you're hoping that the upside outweighs the potential downside. If they ended up with him at 11, I think the front office would be very happy with that. I think that you can never have too many guys with his build, you know, and that's just the modern NBA where you want guys who could score and defend with those long bodies that he has.
I mean, I think he could be, he doesn't reach the ceiling that we would all want, but mm-hmm. I think it's pretty guaranteed he'd find a role in the NBA
yeah.
level somewhere. Do you know, like he'd be a solid rotational player, which again, when you're drafting at 11, you should be fairly happy with. You know, you shouldn't be looking for any kind of guaranteed starter or star or anything like that at 11. So
exactly. And again, he seems to fit the profile of what a lot of what the Knicks seem to value with this front office. And so if they end up with Johnny Davis on draft night, I would not be surprised one bit. I'd be happy with it personally. Like you had mentioned, Alex, it's a good pick. He fits what they like to do a lot. The issue, of course, becomes, you know, is he going to get playing time? Is he going to spend a lot of time in Westchester, you know, to developing, adapting to the NBA game? If they're staying pat at 11, that means they're not offloading assets. So they're going to need to offload some assets, give these young guys some time. You still have Cam Reddish on this roster. You still have Deuce McBride and Quentin Grimes on this roster, you know, and those guys will, if they get playing, they're probably going to get precedence in playing time over a rookie in Johnny Davis. So that would be the interesting thing to me if they go ahead and draft the kid out of Wisconsin.
Do you know, just quickly, Omar, I was thinking about this earlier, that when we first started out in this podcast, one of the first topics we discussed was how deep the roster was. And
we were just
coming out of COVID and, well, not coming out of COVID, sorry, that was right in the middle of COVID. And
if only, you want to check your house there now?
But we were saying that, you know, with all the COVID kind of, you know, players dropping out and things, having a deep roster was just so important. And, you know, we had two players for every position. The roster was very balanced. And as the season went on, we talked more and more about the fact that we had a roster full of good players, but no great players. And yeah, RJ might become a great player one day, but at the moment, we don't have any great players on the roster. And the roster clearly needs a kind of reset as to, you know, making moves to kind of up the quality of the roster. You know, we need more great players and less good players. If that makes sense.
And that's the case for training up to get Ivy, right? You know, you're sure. Like, you see, exactly. If you identify somebody you think is a great player, you get your ass up there and go get them, you know? Yeah. And that's, again, it all depends on how they view this kid. But I don't know, man, everything you hear, it makes it seem like they're really into this guy. So
the only thing I'd say about that is the front office have not leaked anything pretty much since they started. Yeah, and this whole chat about, you know, we talked about Berman, you know, saying he was the apple of their eye and things, that I don't know, it just all seems a bit strange how much is dripping out at the minute.
So when he was talking about that, he mentioned a couple things that made me interested, because normally you take anything Berman says with a grain of salt. He's trying to get clicks on articles, you know. You know, that's just what he does. That's his profession. He's been at it. He's been on the beat for a million years, okay? But he said that they visited with him at the Combine. And typically, you only have a certain amount of visits at the Combine, so you want to visit guys who you're actually going to be in position to draft. So why would they visit with a guy that they probably is not going to be there at 11? Almost definitely isn't going to be there at 11. I think there's some smoke in that regard. But yeah, I mean, we don't know this Leon and Wes and all these guys. They're very tight-lipped. You know, they never say anything. They don't leak anything to the media. And it could be a little, you know, I watched Ivy play at Purdue. It could be a smoke screen. It could be us Knick fans having just being a little too optimistic and hopeful. You know, that's another thing.
That, you know, never happens.
Oh yeah, no. We're the most grounded fan base out there, guys. I don't know what you're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just the point I just wanted to make, but Omar, you said it, is drafting a guy like Johnny Davis, and saying I didn't like the pick, it wasn't a knock at him. It's like he is just one more in the mix of wings and guards that we have, that we don't have enough positions to play them. Like we want to find space for Grimes, we want to find some more space for Quickly. So drafting another guy to get in the mix, if we don't get rid of them, get rid is a strong word, but let's say it, get rid of some guys of our roster, he won't play. So we just one more in the mix, and we are getting in a position because I don't agree with the conversation that we don't draft big guys or centers that this high at 11th. Like, and that's the conversation we had last week about drafting for need and drafting for best player available. Because right now, if we don't sign Mitch, if we don't believe Obi is a guy to build around it, the power forward, if we don't think Randall is that guy either, and we will need someone if we want to trade Noel as well. So we have enough guards and wings. Maybe a big guy would help. And that's a guy like a big conversation here is Jalen Duren, the center. Like, if we need it and he's available at 11, some people say he's going to be drafted earlier than that. So others say it will be later than that. But why not draft a center here? You know, I don't agree with this conversation about, oh, centers are not available or not valuable right now, but people want to pay Mitch $19 million because he's not available.
I feel very strongly about this, Rafa, about the centers thing.
This is so dumb. Like, if we... The four last MVPs wins. One is a center. Other is, let's call him half center. So four MVPs. Giannis wins two. Jokic wins two. And the other guys that Jokic had to beat to win the MVP was Embiid. Look at that. He's a center. Mm-hmm. And Giannis.
You got guys like Towns, Ayton, who are high-level players in this league. Yeah.
Finals MVP. Do you know who was the last guard to win Finals MVP before Curry?
Tony Parker, right?
Kobe Bryant. Kobe. It was too long ago. So maybe it's not a center's league. No, it's not a guards league. Look at the wings. Look at
the wings league. Yeah.
Yeah. Durant, LeBron.
Cool. Apart from Curry, to be like, fair.
What? Yeah. Curry's like the unique.
It's the guards league. You want to draft? Yeah, you can't draft guys, big guys this early. But then you want to play amid centers that only play defense. $20 million. So, man,
don't put Curry and draft in the same sentence around here.
No,
we've got to be careful.
Well, he got Wiseman for next year, so it'll be fun. But what if we ended up drafting at 11, we stay put, and instead of drafting a guard, what if we draft Duren? Mitch is gone, no illustrated. We get two rookies and one half rookie to play. Fun, no? What do you guys think of Duren? Making a face, Omar. What are you thinking?
I like Duren a lot. I think if he's there at 11, you take. And that's... So one of my favorite follows on Twitter is Stacey Patton, who, runs a Strickland Pods. And his whole thing is you could get a good center late. And so, like, your value per position is compromised by taking a center in the lottery. And I normally agree with Stacey, but I think, I don't know, man, I look at Duren and what are we really expecting out of the 11th pick in the draft, right? You're probably expecting a role player. Realistically, like, you're, if you end up with like a situation like Donovan Mitchell where you happen to luck into a superstar, then that's one thing, but that's the exception, not the rule. I think you look at somebody like Duren and you see a high functioning center who has more of a offensive game than what Mitch has, but also gives you those defensive chops, and he's a lot cheaper than Mitchell Robinson would cost. You know, presumably, I know we saw that Hollinger projection that you talked about, you alluded to, Rafa, is where he's expecting to get $19 million a year. I think, Mitch, we've said it all year. I think he wants Robert Williams money, which is $18 million a year over 4 years. So I wouldn't be mad if they went ahead and grabbed Durant. Or even Mark Williams out of Duke. Alex, you had mentioned him before we start recording. Yeah, it's just like, I understand that people feel like the center position is no longer valuable. But it's like, the center position, if you play center like Mitchell Robinson or Rudy Gobert, is probably no longer as valuable. And but if you could develop a little bit of offense, and this Durant kid, he seems like he could. I think that if he's there at 11, you take him. If you identify him as one of your guys. And defensively, I think Tibbs will like him. And you get a nice 1-2 punch with him and Jericho as your young rotation there for centers. I think if you don't re-sign Mitch, or if you have no plans on re-signing Mitch, then that's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be hugely surprised if he was available at 11. I cannot see him dropping. I mean, some boards have him up as high as 5, but I can't really see him that high. But I mean, he's got a like massive body, you know, but he moves well with it. You know, it's not he's not just that kind of big center that just stands under the basket. You know what I mean? He really moves well. I mean, he can get up. You know, he's got great verticality. He has got a shooting touch from mid range, which again separates him from Mitch. He has touch from that side, but I mean, he struggles from the free throw line, which is always a worry when you're thinking about shooting. But I mean, he's not the first center that's going to struggle from the free throw line, but he's also not great in post moves, which is a bit disappointing given his size and his movement that's good. So he's got a lot of work to do, but I mean, obviously his physical tools that he's got are just incredible, you know. So I also wouldn't be too upset kind of going with somebody like that. You mentioned Robert Williams there, Omar, and funnily enough, that's one of his comps, you know, that somebody like that. So if he turns out like anything like Robert Williams, which we've seen in the finals recently, you know, I'd love that. So he's really intriguing kind of prospect. And I mentioned Williams to you earlier because I think the general consensus is that Duren's got a much higher ceiling, but you know, Williams is a much safer pick. You know, that there's a bit more you know, kind of lower floor with Duren. So he's gonna be an interesting one. But I certainly wouldn't shy away from drafting the center. As Rafa said, I think it's a bit of a myth that you know, you can't do that, because I mean, look at all the number one picks that have been taken. Look at all the MVP candidates that have been, you know, there's so many that have been bigs and centers that it can't be discounted, you know. So and as we've talked many times, the true point guard is really no more. That, you know, it's, you know, you've got to have that kind of multi-positional game now, and these kind of guys do, you know, they can guard out in the perimeter, they can play multiple positions if they need. So he's a really intriguing one. He's already been all over all the draft boards, you know, all different kinds of positions, but I think he'll be, you know, he'll end up higher than the 11. So I think if we were to trade up, then he could be a candidate at something like 7, but I can't see him being at 11. But if he is, then yeah, again, take him.
I've said, I've ranted, I've made Mario happy 1 week later, but I did it. A guy I was intrigued about in whatever I read in the draft was AJ Griffin. He's intriguing. I guess he's not the player Tibbs would pick, because apparently his defense is as good as mine. I don't know. He intrigued me. I don't know why. People talk about him. We draft him. We could draft him as well. But those injuries, the injury reports as well, he had a few injuries throughout his short career now. Would you take a bet on a guy like AJ Griffin, because apparently he has a lot of upside, and we know about having a lot of upside on guys like Cam, for example, who are on the team. So it would be two players in the same situation. But would you take AJ Griffin if he's available at 11?
I mean, he's a shooter that shoots 45%, I mean, on high volume. So the upside is pretty obvious. And, you know, the way the game's gone, you know, these kind of guys are just invaluable if you can get them. I mean, it's not to say he doesn't have holes in his game. I mean, he's not a great defender. But he's got a variety of shooting. It's not just spot up shooting that he's good at. You know, he can move as well. But yeah, defensive wise, he's not great. He's not fast in any way, so he can't recover well on defense. The big thing is, yeah, the injuries. I mean, he's had two knee injuries. I'm not totally sure if it's, you know, both knees or whether it's two injuries on one knee. Or he's had ankle injuries as well. You know, you've got to think there's huge bust potential with him. But what, you know, like we've already mentioned, you know, where you're picking at 11, you're going to take a swing. Is he like a Michael Porter Jr. style kind of pick where, you know, you just take the risk, you know, at somewhere like 11 where you're going to, you know, potentially have nothing. But, you know, if it hits, you know, plenty of players have started off with bad injuries and have gone on to have great NBA careers. So, you know, I think it's a really intriguing pick. And I know the Knicks have had interest in him. We've had him in and had a good look at him. And I think that there was talk about him losing explosiveness with the injuries. And that's something that will show up in the workouts, I think. So, again, you've got to trust your trainers there and your scouts and things that he's going to recover from these injuries. So, but yeah, obviously, really intriguing prospect, but yeah, really, really worrying. I would tend to kind of shy away from that one, to be honest, because even if he does hit, then yeah, just there are holes in his game even when he is healthy. So yeah, I like him as a player, but I think there's other guys that will be available at 11 that I would take over him.
So Griffin to me is the anti Johnny Davis pick, right? Johnny Davis is kind of like safe pick, you know what you're getting, you know, it turns into a solid NBA player.
Yeah.
Griffin feels at 11, if he's there at 11, more of a home run swing to me. You see the shooting's real, you know, it's 45% on four attempts a game. He gets by defenders, but he's not the most athletic guy. But no. You have a lot of people saying, well, this could be a guy who could score 25 a night in the NBA. You are hoping that you can coach up the defense a little bit and he can mainly rely on his size. I think he has to be a target for the Knicks. He's a local guy too. I think he like is from Westchester.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll take that for whatever the fuck that's worth, you know, but
I don't know, into the homegrown player.
No, I don't think it's a big deal. No, it's not a big deal. I don't think they care, but it's a good marketing sell, you know, if they really want to, like, hey, you know, the guy's from Westchester, right where our practice facility is, you know. Son of a former NBA player as well, in Adrian Griffin, who played in the league for a few years for the Rockets. I think the Knicks like that pedigree. You know, they like guys who you know, grew up around the game and things of that nature, but you know, Jonathan Macri made a really good point on a recent KFS pod about the fact that at every level of his career, he has dealt with injuries so far. You know, that dates back to middle school, to high school, AAU, and into college last year as well. So you're taking a risk with a guy like Griffin. And it really depends, I think, on if you're going to stay put at 11, what kind of pick are you going to make? Are you going to try to be... So there's three, like we've outlined three different scenarios here. You take the safe pick, which is probably Johnny Davis. You draft for need, which is Jalen Duren. Or you take a big swing and hope that Griffin stays healthy and can turn into a fringe all-star type player. Those are your three different schools of thought when it comes to this draft and when it comes to staying at 11. I think that they would kind of push him into, again, that would be another Westchester guy for a little bit. Develop his defensive skills against NBA-type players in Westchester and maybe get him in spot minutes throughout the regular season. But yeah, I mean, I would be much more comfortable taking Duren or Johnny Davis over him. The shot, though, is intriguing. 45% from three is still 45% from three.
It's going to get you paid in the league, isn't it?
And he'll be around forever. You know, if you make threes, I mean, look, somebody like Danny Green, you know, a proficient three-point shooter. He'll be around forever, you know, and those guys just stick around because
Steve Novak.
Everybody needs shooting. Yeah, Novak, yeah, the legend.
Oh, my God.
The legend, Steve Novak. if you can make three-point shots at a pretty decent rate in the NBA, you'll stick around for a long time.
Yeah. Now, there's another narrative about, well, this guy brings up two narratives that mentioned reaching before the Johnny Davis kind of reach, but people are talking we should really reach big, deep down. And instead of trading down for this guy, just pick him at 11 because the Knicks need a point guard. Don't know if you heard this.
I might have seen a couple things about that.
Yeah, me too. We should draft at 11 or trade down. It's the two narratives. Ty Washington. Instead of moving up, we don't want to give up assets. I think we should, but okay. We should draft Ty. I would love saying Ty the rest of my life as a player. I love the name, but he's a point guard. Mm-hmm. He's not. People don't say he can be it's a two guard. No, he's a point guard. And do you think he would fit? Do you think we would reach that deep down? Because he's in some boards he goes down as a 19th pick. So it's a big reach. Would you guys be okay if we drafted him at 11th? Or do you think we should trade down for him? Omar doesn't think we should.
You look at Eddie Mock and anybody's talking about Ty, it's in that, like you said, in that 16 to 20 range. I could see him falling. You know, the size is very Emmanuel Quickly like, you know, and so if that's the idea, then is that like your two-headed Kentucky point guard monster that you're trying to sell to the fan base? Ultimately, if you draft Ty Washington, that tells you that you don't believe in Emmanuel Quickly as a future point guard for this team. I'm sorry, that's just what it means. So if that's the case, then there you go. You've drafted, you know, because this draft has really no point guards, if we're being honest, you know, no high-level point guards. Ivy's more of a two. All these other guys are kind of combo guards, you know, Dyson Daniels, combo guard, Shane Sharp. You know, so if you're drafting Ty, especially at 11, you're going to be saying, hey, this is the point guard, you know, of the future. And I think that rubs Emmanuel Quickly the wrong way. And who's to say he wouldn't get the same IQ treatment? He has same measurables, can play off ball. He's very similar to IQ. They went to the same school. It doesn't help, you know. So, And he was playing mostly off ball at Kentucky this year. So he's an interesting prospect. I think fit-wise, it's not the best with the Knicks. I think he could go elsewhere, and it would probably be a better – like, honestly, if I don't know where Phoenix is drafting, but if he slips a little bit as an eventual Chris Paul replacement, I think it's an intriguing prospect for Phoenix to take a swing at him. But, yeah, I'm not super sold on them drafting him at 11, definitely not at 11. I'm still on the fence about them drafting him, even with a trade down to 15 or 20, 15, that 15 to 20 range. I don't know. What do you think about it, Alex?
Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting, like bringing up the IQ comp. I mean, the only thing with Kentucky is that they do tend to hold things back with players. Do you know, like True. they, a lot of kind of hidden stuff that you don't get to see that gets showcased at the next level. So maybe there's something there. I mean, maybe there's been an overrating by the fact that all year he seems to be the only point guard in this whole draft. The fact that he is a proper point guard that he's just had that overvaluing thing. Do you know that any team that's looking for a point guard, it's like there's none in this draft. Oh, there's Ty, right? Okay, let's just put him in the top 20 and see how he goes. It's we've got to have a point guard in the top 20 sort of thing. So everything that I've seen of him really, I'm just not excited about him. Do you know, he'll be a solid he'll be a solid player probably somewhere, but there's nothing there that's is exciting me at all. So if he's trading down, I mean, the obvious trade down is that Charlotte 13 and 15. So, I mean, if you were trading down for 13 and 15 and you took Ty Ty with the 15th pick and you got somebody else, maybe Sochan, we've not really mentioned yet, or even Griffin, you know, if he drops that far, then yeah, I mean, you could start to get interested then. But I mean, you've got guys like McBride, you know, sitting on the bench that are developing West, you know, is he going to be any better than McBride? Do you know, and McBride's already far away from the starting lineup, so I can't really see it at all. It's not really something I'd like to get, you know, get involved in. You know, I can't see him being a huge, like, high ceiling guy either. So, what's really the point? Do you know? I'd rather go for, if we're talking about guys like that, at another position, and just put some investment in McBride and just see where he goes.
Now, let me ask you this, Alex. Say you trade down hypothetically and Jaden Hardy's there with Ty Ty. Do you take Hardy over him?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
yeah, so. I would too. Yeah. I would too. Yeah.
I think there's just that higher ceiling again. And Hardy's had that Ignite experience as well. So you've got a bit more to go on experience wise. So yeah, I think that's a no brainer.
Yeah, you guys mentioned about if we pick Ty Ty at 11, how much how it could roll off on not well on quickly, and how much pressure would you put on Ty Ty to do something like that, to reach so much for him? I mean, you show you believe in him, but you know, oh, we need a point guard, it's you, please play. It's like yeah, well, another guy we're ruining. I don't think we're getting him going up. Or a wing up, what the hell, staying at 11. But I talked to you guys before that I think we will use a draft to move some pieces around. And if we can't trade up, maybe we try, okay, let's we need to get these twin loads, some of these guys offload. So let's trade down and get Ty Ty. I mean, he's the best thing. Or even if Davis falls a bit, because we can trade down, because there are a few boards that have Davis, Johnny Davis at 13 and 14. Maybe we trade down with the Hornets one of those picks, because they have two picks, 13 and 15. We trade down for him. Like, we load Burks or Noel, whatever. The same guys keep coming up. So Ty Ty 11, I don't think is a thing. It would be too much. We're not that desperate, because we're not a playoff team, a regular playoff team that, okay, Ty Ty Washington will bring us the championship. It's no, it won't happen. So, to your point, Omar, the Suns don't have a first round pick.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought they did. Yeah.
They traded it for with the Nuggets. Oh, so the Nuggets pick. Okay. I don't know what trade that was, but, It's that.
Gotcha. So. Gotcha. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, his fit will be interesting. You know, I think a playoff team could scoop him as a developmental prospect and see what he can become. Another thing, I mean, to answer your question about, you know, the pressure of him coming in drafted as a point guard for the Knicks, I mean, the pressure is immense. You know, this team hasn't had a competent point guard in a couple of decades, you know, at this point.
Hey, man. Yeah. Respecting Felton like that? Come on.
I mean, I love Raymond Felton. We know that. You know, you guys know how much I love Raymond Felton. But it's like, we haven't had an elite point guard, you know, I mean, in forever, really. Like, when was the last closest thing we had to an elite point guard was when Mark Jackson and Rod Strickland were here in the 80s. You know, like, like, if we're being honest, right? Like, the 90s didn't have a great point. Like, Derek Harper was good. He was like a veteran, whatever. Charlie Ward was good. Yeah, and then, you know, the Melo years, I mean, pick your carousel of mediocre point guards that we had. You know, it's like you had Raymond Felton, and then he kind of fell off a cliff after a few years. But
Billups,
I mean, they should have kept him, to be honest. But
yeah,
ultimately, we haven't had a high-level point guard or initiator of offense, whatever you want to call it, that kind of thing.
We had Jeremy Lin for 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just like the Lin Sanity thing shows you how hungry this fan base is for a legitimate point guard.
How hyped were you with Jeremy Lin? How hyped were you?
No one couldn't tell me shit for 2 weeks. Let me tell you. Like, I was just like, yeah, I'm on top of the world. We got the guy now. Lin's sanity. Let's go.
You know, I was stopping random people in the street just talking about him. Like,
it's like you watch Jeremy
Lin. I live in Scotland, not America. And yeah, not even my friends knew who he was. But by the end of those 2 weeks, everybody knew who he was. You know, that it was in my circle. So.
Oh, yeah, man. So I wouldn't wish that kind of pressure on a guy like Ty Ty, who quite clearly isn't ready to be a lead guard in this league right now.
I mean, not even on Ivy, you're trading up for him. Like, hey man, we traded up for you. It's New York. It's the pressure. And to be fair, playing in New York as a guard or any position, there will be the pressure from fans and the
fans. Ask Julius Randle. It's hard. Yeah. You know,
what happened?
Not easy. You know,
did something happen?
Something with Julius?
I don't know. I blanked out. But yeah, it's the pressure's there, and clearly, with what we are been talking about, we have no idea or what the Knicks can do, because like Alex said, this front office doesn't say anything. I mean, we have a competent front office when we create a podcast. It's So. What in your gut, looking at not what you want to do or what you think, looking at knowing this team, how they disappointed you and everything, what do you guys think we will do? You know, I think we will trade. I've been, I don't know if I mentioned this in this pod before, I did like three times, but what do you guys think? We will move up, trade down, stay at our position and draft best player available or for need, because we've been all over the place. But what do you guys think?
Well, I think in order, they will, Ivy will be the trade up choice, whether that's going straight to four or going from seven to four or whatever, that will be the number one priority. A little bit going back to the Obi draft again, you know, that was their obvious. They were trying to trade up, and then, you know, that's the number one priority, I think, is to go for Ivy. If that doesn't work, then I think they'll see who's available at 11. If somebody like Griffin drops, or Davis drops, then they would take them. But then the priority after that is a little bit of just seeing what we can get. You know, you saw last year some of the moves that they made, and I think we'll see something similar again. So I think it's a very fluid draft for the Knicks. I think it's not an obvious choice, but, you know, the number one priority is to move up, obviously. But if that doesn't work, then there's all sorts of things that could go on. I think if they are trading down, then the Charlotte picks are the obvious ones to go for, because I think it is a draft that can go down as far as 15 with the quality fairly flat. So, you know, I think that's the obvious target if you are trading down. So hopefully Ivy, then next priority, maybe Davis or Griffin at 11.
Yeah, I think they are all in on training up for Ivy. And if they can't get a deal done, I wouldn't be surprised if they trade back out of the first round entirely, to be honest. I think they trust their scouts. They trust Perrin and Brock Aller to find the right sort of talent and to be able to maximize that talent. And I wouldn't be surprised if they traded back to get a pick for next year, because next year's draft is supposed to be incredibly deep. They already have 6 picks. You know, so it makes you wonder if they're like saying, okay, next year's draft is going to be incredible. If we end up with 3 first round picks and 4 second round picks, and we see a guy in the top 3 and we're not in the lottery, or we're not in the top 3, do we just say, take them all and whatever, and just to move up to do that? It wouldn't surprise me, you know, if they're thinking that way. If they really, like, if they look at it, like, we really want Ivy, but for whatever reason, we haven't been able to get him. Well, let's kick the can down the road one more year. You know, that wouldn't surprise me at all, because they feel like they got enough young talent, I think, to compete for the play-in. And they look at RJ, Obi quickly, you know, pending whatever they do with Julius, Grimes, you know, and they see all these guys and they're just kind of like, yeah, we can compete with these guys and then, you know, see what happens next year around this time. But I think the priority is Ivy for sure.
Yeah, I think we're going to try everything. Just move up, move down, see what happens. What deals can we get? So I don't know what. I have no clue what we're doing. It's why I love the draft and get disappointed by it. So we have no idea what we're doing with the first round pick. What about the second round pick, 42nd? Like, I have no idea what players are around there. And like, if the 11th is low, if we want someone to make an impact, what about 42nd pick, like the second round pick? Any preferences, do you think?
Yeah, I've got to admit, I only really look at the first round. I tend to switch off after the first round's done. You know, obviously there's value that we can pick up there. We've got Robinson and Sims to a lesser extent. I think that, you know, we've had success in the second round before, but it's just not somewhere that, you know, you can expect to get anything. You know, if something comes out of the second round, then it's a bonus. But yeah, I don't really look to the second round to see any kind of real value, especially. I mean, maybe when you're down near the bottom and you're just trying to kind of build assets and things like that, then fair enough. But where the Knicks are at the moment, where they're trying to get to the next level, they're trying to get to the play-in and playoffs, then yeah, it's not somewhere where you really have to rely on picking up any real talent now.
I have a couple players that I'm kind of looking at there. But again, like you said, Alex, it's just like, you can only research but so much, you know, and most of that time goes into the first round. I think if they don't take Durin with the 11 pick, or don't get Durin at some point, or Mark Williams, that they would get another center, like a Christian Coloco, which is 7-1 guy. I think he's interesting. Also, I'm selfishly going to say this. So the college team I root for is St. John's. They have a player who is in the draft. His name is Julian Champagne. And he's a wing player, scored a bunch of points at St. John's. A lot of people have him mocked late second, you know. So I'd love to see, you know, obviously St. John's plays at MSG, New York-based team, New York guy, you know. I think it'd be a fun story. Throw him in Westchester for a couple years, see what happens. But yeah, that's kind of the extent of my prediction when it comes to the second round. I always do like to look at the second round just to see what people say and try to remember if any of those guys ever pop. You know, I remember the critiques of Mitch when he got drafted. I remember watching that draft. And, like, the critiques, you know, they kind of came to fruition, honestly. They like, yeah, he's a good defender. A lot of questions about his offensive game, a lot of questions about his maturity. And Here we are 4 years later. A lot of questions about his maturity, a lot of questions about his offensive game. So that's when the scouting was on point, you know. But then
I remember seeing Mitch in Summer League was just like, all right, yeah, I can see why he was taken in the second round. You know, he looked so raw, he looked all over the place at times, but you could see there was something there that was the reason why he was thought of so highly back in high school. So.
Yeah, that was such a weird situation too, because he was committed to Western Kentucky, then he just never went, yeah. And he was just going to like train by himself to get ready for the draft because of their, you know, 19-year-old rule, you know. But yeah, his career has been so weird, you know. This whole
we never
time.
Talked about Shaden Sharp, you know, that yeah. not that he's a similar, he's going to drop to the second round or anything, but yeah, just similar situation, just that.
He's like a mystery man, you know. Yeah, very strange.
You see huge bust potential with Shaden Sharp. I know he's getting taken really high, but yeah, really interested to see where he goes.
I have a feeling the Kings might fuck around and take him.
I would love it's such a Kings
chaos.
I'd love
it.
This is the most Kings thing of all time. You know, yeah. It's like, hey, here's a high upside wing player. We need a wing. Fuck it. We're the Sacramento Kings.
The video in this guy is so limited that, you know, it's like workout videos with guys that should not even be on the same court as him. It's incredible.
Well, it's like Mitch doing rec league runs and hitting threes. You know, it's the same concept.
No, that highlight. James Harden was great against the Shanghai Sharks. Like, yeah. Great.
It's amazing. Like, I mean, yeah.
Hey, speaking of the Shanghai Sharks, shout out to Knicks legend Michael Beasley. Just signed with them, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Oh my God, I used to love Beasley. By the way, I think, oh, he's going to be great.
Yeah, I remember watching him in college at Kansas State. You couldn't be stopped. You couldn't stop him. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Never lacking in confidence, that guy. That's for sure.
Something went down.
Fun time.
Yeah.
Something went sour.
Yeah. Well, more than something. Many things went sour with him, actually. So that's going to wrap us up for another episode of Worldwide Knicks, episode 34. Thank you so much for joining. If you like the podcast, please make sure to rate and review and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to keep up with us on Twitter, where we've been joining Twitter spaces lately, been posting about the draft, posting about upcoming free agency and other things, please give us a follow at WW Knicks Podcast. We're up to 913 followers right now. Would love to be at 1,000 by the time preseason hits. So that would be incredible to start off the year with a healthy following there. And yeah, like I mentioned at the top, we did join the Let's Talk Knicks Twitter spaces, something we're going to be looking to do more often. But thank you again for tuning in for another episode of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. And we will catch you guys next week, where we will be recapping what the Knicks did in the draft.